Everyone needs inspiration, and we need it too. So from time to time, we pause just to single out some of the people whose work we're appreciating, people from whom we want more.
We call this segment People We're Pulling For. It's a chance to throw all our support behind some of our favorites and maybe get you pulling for them too. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. Here with me and Stephen in the studio is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair, always a highlight to have with us, our friend Audie Cornish, host of All Things Considered. Welcome back, Audie.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No matter when we have you back, I always say and mean it's been too long.
Oh.
We are talking about people we're pulling for. We've done this segment a few times in the past, but we're always happy to return to it. Stephen Thompson, hit me. Who are you pulling for?
Okay, so first, a little backstory. I'm guessing that at least one or two of you has seen the new trailer for the movie Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yes.
You've seen it, Glenn?
Yes.
Have you seen it, Linda?
Mm-hmm.
Audie?
I've seen the internet react to it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Now, the internet has obsessed largely over Sonic the Hedgehog's weird appearance.
Yep.
The fact that he has human teeth, for example. The fact
How do they know they're human teeth, though? They're hedgehog teeth.
No, they're not. That's the problem.
All right, go ahead,
Thompson. So, weird-looking hedgehog situation does not look particularly like Sonic the Hedgehog from the Sonic the Hedgehog video games on which this movie is sort of based. People have reacted to the fact that the trailer features Coolio's Gangsta's Paradise,
Sure. Which
is a very strange choice. Less attention, I find, paid to the fact that Jim Carrey is doing that horrid thing that Jim Carrey used to do all the time again, or the fact that James Marsden has staked his claim as the go-to guy to act alongside chipmunks in Enchanted Rabbits in Hop, and now this. They are actually reworking the film to make Sonic look less weird.
Mm-hmm.
What I am concerned about, and the person I am pulling for, who is not Jim Carrey or Sonic the Hedgehog, is Ben Schwartz.
Oh, good.
The voice
yes.
of Sonic the Hedgehog in these movies, and somebody I am afraid people will blame if this movie turns out to be the gigantic boondoggle that everybody has already decided.
Now, remind people who might not remember who Ben Schwartz is.
Now, Ben Schwartz specializes in playing kind of a smarmy creeps. He played Clyde Oberholt on House of Lies, and I'm guessing people who listen to the show know him best as Jean-Ralphio Saperstein on Parks and Rec.
Woo!
Jean-Ralphio!
Where Ben Schwartz is absolutely hilarious and manages to thread this incredibly difficult needle between being so gross and yet weirdly likeable. I wouldn't say likeable.
I wouldn't say likeable.
I would say weirdly lovable.
Hmm.
Ooh, tricky, Thompson. Yeah.
Very, very, very tricky thing to pull off. And I just love the guy. I love it when he pops up in things. He's a recurring voice on BoJack Horseman.
Yep.
He pops up on lots and lots of comedy podcasts. Mm-hmm. I just like the guy. I root for him, and I fear that people are going to pin at least some of whatever's going on with Sonic the Hedgehog on him. I think he's great.
I'll go with you on that, Thompson. And I think you're right that it is possible for that to damage people. And I will also mention, James Marsden is one that I have for years been pulling for better opportunities for that guy. He's in Dead to Me, which just premiered on Netflix, and he's very funny in that. He's very funny in Enchanted.
Right.
He's very funny in 27 Dresses,
a movie that I love.
Yeah. I'm with you on everybody in this movie needs to be protected from anything bad happening.
Except Jim Carrey when he does what he's doing in the trailer.
By which you mean the kind of rubber face
that,
mugging.
Like pulling faces and talking weird.
Gotcha.
Weird. not my thing.
Jim Carrey should go on tour and just call it pulling faces and talking weird.
not into that Jim Carrey at all.
I gotcha. Thank you very much, Stephen. Glenn Weldon, give me a person you are pulling for.
Okay. Ryan O'Connell is the writer and star of Netflix's Special, and that's a sitcom about a young gay man with a mild form of cerebral palsy who gets a job at an analog of a place like Thought Catalog. After getting hit by a car in the first episode, everyone at his new job thinks that he is limping because of that. He does not disabuse them of that notion. Wackiness ensues. It's based on his own life. He wrote it himself. It was conceived originally as a series of digital shorts for the Warner Brothers digital wing, but it got picked up by Netflix. And in an unusual move at the time, more common now, Netflix just bought it as is. So it's when you see it on Netflix, they are 15-minute episodes. And it's got a very webisode-y feel.
It does, yeah.
I like the show a lot. It's specific. It's very sweet. Full disclosure, maybe a little too sweet for me. But it's got a great performance by Jessica Hecht, who plays his mom, and a really smart sex scene, one of my favorite sex scenes I've seen in a long time, unlike anything you've seen before, where he loses his virginity to a sex worker he's hired, played with great compassion and great warmth by Brian Jordan Alvarez. I also like the way that his sexuality is not what the guy is struggling with here. He is trying to come to terms with his disability.
Right.
It's just something new. Now, in the 90s, stand-up comics wanted to get their own sitcoms, and that was the apotheosis, right? And now it feels like in shows like Special and in shows like Shrill, writers, or in this case, bloggers, are getting shows about their experiences. Mm-hmm. It might seem weird that I'm pulling for him because if you look at this from the outside, he is starring and writing a Netflix series based on his own life. Isn't that the pinnacle of what?
The dream.
The dream. Here's the thing. The show is good, but it does feel to me a little undercooked, a little unfinished. I don't mean not polished. I'm talking about something more basic. The guy, the show would benefit hugely from a writer's room.
Right. Exactly.
Which yeah. he did not get.
Exactly.
And the scripts went from his word processor to a soundstage without anybody kind of pushing against and challenging and interrogating these jokes. And also, he comes to this as a writer, right? And he's relying in these scripts on things like wordplay, which he does very well. It's a hallmark of his writing that needs a very considered approach if you're going to put it into scripts. The casting's a little uneven. The scripts sound written at this point. And that's just a product of how this thing came to be. And so even when the jokes he's delivering or his other actors are delivering are very sharp, there is this tone of sweetness which kind of takes some of the... They don't land as hard, I guess I'm saying.
Yeah. I think this is such a smart take on this show because I had the same reaction. I watched it. I was incredibly impressed by it for what it is.
Yeah.
But I also felt like it needs to be built out.
Yeah,
and I felt like it's almost like, I feel like it's diminishing to say it feels like proof of concept, but it feels like proof of ability. It feels like proof of great promise, but this is not the pinnacle of what he could be doing, which is not to say it needs to be a half-hour show. I'm all for exploring the possibility of short-form series, but I agree with you. I think I would pull for him too, and I also want him to be able to do more things than just tell his own story. I think he's funny and he's great. Go ahead.
This is exactly my point. I'm perhaps being unfair by comparing it in my head to something like The Other Two, which is so clearly a product of a room full of very smart, very funny people challenging each other. So no joke gets out of that room unless it has justified its existence. But Special is good, could be better, but maybe Special isn't the thing for this guy, right? Maybe he is a writer after all. Sent a lot of writers write very personal, very autobiographical first novels, and then in their second novel, because they have to, they move on to larger themes, still keeping it personal, but kind of addressing the wider world. And that's where I'm hoping this guy can do that and still retain what is making him so compelling and charming. So that's Ryan O'Connell right now in Special, but who knows where he is going to be next.
Yeah, great pick.
That's fantastic. Okay, so I have a really weird one, so bear with me. I'm rooting for Adam Sandler, who I saw on Saturday Night Live.
Somebody ought to give that guy a chance.
And someone ought to give that guy a chance.
Finally,
all right. So bear with me. So obviously, like, he is someone who is rich and connected and has no problems. And obviously, people have talked about him coming back, so to speak, a lot. I know this because I Googled Adam Sandler comeback and there was like 14 think pieces. Uh-huh. And what it did actually was make me interrogate my sympathy for him. Meaning when I watched him do the Chris Farley tribute on SNL, it was very sweet and rooted in nostalgia that appealed directly to me in a certain age group, probably the same age group of people who are going to hear Gangsta's Paradise in Sonic the Hedgehog and think this makes sense, a classic. And I really felt like, oh, I want to see more Adam Sandler. And I was like, why did I think that? Like, I had to go.
There's a lot out there for you.
There's a lot out there for me, but I haven't been engaging on it. And I realize I'm one of those terrible elite snob dumb critics that is like, he was so great in Punch Drunk Love and Spanglish and like, you know, and
I don't know
and,
if he was great in Spanglish.
Yeah, well, wouldn't go that far.
Not a model of Latinx sensitivity, of course, but I think I'm one of those people who was very captured by some of the work that he did in the past and indie work, and there's some nostalgia there. And I was reading this one essay, Why Do We Keep Rooting for Adam Sandler's Comeback by Inku Kang. This is in Slate, I think. And the theory was this: in this writer's mind, for most of his career, the gulf between Sandler's potential talent and his actual body of work has felt like an unresolved chord, a problem to be solved. And I thought, this is sort of a good point, because for creative people, the gulf between where you want to be and where you are is a thing you're constantly trying to close that gap. And I did wonder, like, maybe there's just like a part of me that like looks at Adam Sandler and thinks, yeah, I feel you, man. You know, like, you don't always do the work that is like the work everyone expects. You don't always get there, but you're just like chugging along. Sometimes you're a hack chugging along. And there are some people who have had comebacks that I didn't know I needed. Matthew McConaughey. I did not lay in bed at night hoping for that comeback when all of a sudden we were in the middle of its reconnaissance or whatever called. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I was totally into it. So anyway, my pick, as weird as it is, is Adam Sandler. Folks, give this kid a try.
You know, I did not. That was not who I expected you to talk about.
No,
I know. It's weird. But this is my safe space to be weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think of you as clamoring for Grown Ups 3, but sure. Sure. Why not? Go nuts.
It's interesting.
Interesting. What a diss.
No. It's not. I'm thinking about it. No. I'm sitting with it because I think that I have had a very weird relationship with his body of work as well. I am like the only person who didn't hate the movie he did with Jennifer Aniston. For some reason, I went to that movie. Nobody else even remembers he did a movie with her, but he did. And it was like a little romantic comedy dopey thing. And I went to it fully expecting to not like it at all. No one else liked it at all. And I thought it was fine.
What movie is this?
Diverting. I don't remember. Hang on a second. Okay. So I just want to point out our producer, Jessica Reedy, just told me it's Just Go With It. And I originally thought she was saying, don't worry about the name of the movie. But it is called Just Go With It. And I didn't hate it. I have complicated feelings about this audio. But I did think that Farley tribute was very touching.
It's more of a critique of my own thinking, you know, like, who am I to say what this guy should do with his creative energy and work? And yet the people who touch us at key parts of our lives, especially the teen years, which is when I came across him, that was like the first comedy album that I ever like purchased on my own, my little cassette tape, and like laughed at those songs and totally got into it. And Chris Farley, like that exact period, it's like I think the first time a boy took me to the movies, it was to a Chris Farley film. Right. Like this stuff is like,
good job, fella.
Yeah, good job. But it just means that like I feel like sometimes who we root for is rooted in things that we're rooting for in ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, culturally, he was inescapable during the Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison era. So, yes, that leaves a strong impression on people of my generation. So
I'm not pulling for Jim Carrey, right?
Sure.
Like, so I think it's very a personal connection you can have to these things.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hear you, Anna.
I silenced the group.
No, I'm glad you chose this because it's off the beaten path in this way.
Right.
My pick is a director whose name is Stella Magee. I've talked about her on this show before at a time when I thought you pronounced her name Stella Maggie, but you don't. You pronounce it Stella Magee. It's M-E-G-H-I-E. She directed a film called Jean of the Joneses, which I saw in Toronto in 2016, and which I've mentioned before. It did not get theatrical distribution. It has kind of continued to be something that I believe it aired on TV1, the network.
Wow.
And so Jean of the Joneses was a movie that I really liked. It's kind of a matriarchal family movie. She also then directed Everything Everything in 2017, which is a YA adaptation that had Amanda Stenberg and Nick Robinson, who starred in Love, Simon. So she also directed a film called The Weeknd, which I saw in Toronto this past fall and which just had a screening at Tribeca as we tape this. And The Weeknd is a romantic comedy that stars, among others, Sasheer Zamata, DaWanda Wise, and Kim Whitley. She has coming up in 2020 a film called The Photograph that is a drama that will star, among others, Issa Rae and Lakeith Stanfield.
Wow.
If you just saw the Gina Rodriguez film Someone Great on Netflix, Lakeith Stanfield is in that suddenly as a very straightforward romantic interest, and it was a new look at that guy for me. He's wonderful in it and very romantically appealing in a way that I don't think he's shown off too much in a lot of other things. She also has a film coming with another one with Issa Rae called American Princess, which is a comedy, I believe. And one of the producers is Paul Feig. So this, to me, Paul Feig, who has done wonderful work with a lot of comedic actresses, and I am so excited about kind of where she's going, because I have been sort of, I have been like one of the Stella McGee stans since I saw Gina the Joneses. Anyway, so that's who I'm falling for.
That's a great one.
Great director. Love her. Tell us about the people that you are pulling for. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time to talk about our favorite thing, what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Madewell, where the motto is, good days start with great jeans. How did they make them so great? Madewell starts with premium denim, then offers men's and women's styles for seriously everyone. Also, you can recycle any brand of jeans in a Madewell store, and they'll give you $20 off a new pair. They work with the Blue Jeans Go Green program to turn old jeans into housing insulation for communities in need. Terms apply. Ready to find your perfect fit? Stop by a Madewell store or go to madewell.com. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Zoom. When you can't be there in person, Zoom. Zoom is used by millions to connect face-to-face, across town, or around the world. Share files, video, anything, and connect through any device, desktop, laptop, tablet, smartphone, or conference room system. Zoom video conferencing, Zoom rooms, Zoom video webinars, and Zoom phone lets you do business at the speed of Zoom. Visit Zoom online to set up your free account today. Meet happy with Zoom.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Well, all last week, I soaked up culture. And I kicked off that week by going to the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. and seeing Iron and Wine perform with the National Symphony Orchestra as conducted by David Campbell, who has worked on hundreds and hundreds of the best-selling albums you know, has won an Oscar for writing the score for Brokeback Mountain. He is also Beck's dad. If you want to know what Beck will look like as an older gentleman, you can Google David Campbell. This concert was in celebration of an Iron and Wine album called Our Endless Numbered Days from 2004. Mm-hmm. And it is one of my favorite albums of the 21st century so far. It is so beautiful. And seeing these songs with these orchestrations, which David Campbell arranged for orchestra, was incredibly beautiful. They also closed the orchestral set with the song The Trapeze Swinger, which I think I've mentioned on this show is one of my very, very favorite songs of all time. It's 9 minutes long. If you have not heard it, it is absolutely incredible. It wrecks me every single time. It wrecked me with an orchestra.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, sir?
Tuca and Birdie is a half-hour comedy series on Netflix, animated. It is by Lisa Hanawalt. I'm a big fan of Lisa Hanawalt. I interviewed her at SPX a few years back. I'm a big fan of Baby Geniuses. She's half of that podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. And she shaped the visual design of a little show you might have heard of called BoJack Horseman. Mm-hmm. It stars Tiffany Haddish, Ali Wong, Steven Yeun. It's not one of these series you have to reach for. Well, it's sort of like this. It's sort of like this. It's Broad City. It's Broad City if Ilana were a toucan and Abby was a song thrush. But the animation allows it to go bigger, weirder, even more surreal. Now, when you sit down to it, you're going to have this little cognitive dissonance because it looks a lot like BoJack Horseman. And BoJack Horseman is a show that I love. It's very funny. It is not possible to binge that show because as great as the jokes are, it just comes up against all this darkness and you just kind of every so often you just need to stand up and take a walk around the house. That is not the issue here. This show is so bright and light and stupid and funny that it would make a great thing to polish off on a Sunday afternoon. So that's Tuca and Bertie on Netflix.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Audie Cornish, what is making you happy this week? Is it Adam Sandler?
I'm never going to live that down. The thing that's making me happy this week is an interview on the podcast Without Fail, which is from Gimlet and is done by their, I guess, CEO, Alex Blumberg. And this particular interview is with Anna Chlumsky. She is Emmy-nominated actress who is currently on Veep. She plays the character of Amy, who's a kind of high-strung staffer. People know her as a child actor in the 91 film My Girl with Macaulay Culkin. And this interview has her describing what it was like to be hit with that kind of fame at 10 years old and what it was like for her to go through puberty and still be trying to get roles in the industry and the moment when she decided to take a step back and then how she kind of came back, so to speak. You know, we hear so many child actor stories that are really just dark and kind of arduous and depressing. And she tells it with such grace and insight, and her story is not one of like falling into emotional despair and drug use. Her story is, it is an actual coming of age story of like deciding for yourself how you're going to live your life. And it also gives you an incredible glimpse into fame, like what it's like to be famous from a child's point of view, which is startlingly visceral, you know, to hear. I'm a big fan of the long form interview, and this is the one that caught my ear, so to speak, this week without fail. Gimlet.
Thank you, Audie. What is making me happy this week is an excellent book that I finished this week called Say Nothing, A True Story of Murder and Memory in Northern Ireland. It sounds kind of heavy, and it is kind of heavy, but it is a really good book. It is by Patrick Radden Keefe. It's a true story of a woman named Jean McConville, but it uses that story as a way to tell the long history of the Troubles in Northern Ireland. This is a part of history that I have never completely been as up to speed on as I wished I was. We have on this podcast sometimes had sloshy lines between what's the UK and what's England and what's Ireland and Northern Ireland. And it's like, after you read this book, you're like, oh, now I understand why people were really super extremely mad at us when we got some of those things wrong, candidly. The book goes through both the story of people who were part of the IRA. It goes through the story of people who were part of the government, part of the kind of every side of this conflict and every part of what was happening. It casts a very skeptical eye on essentially everyone and everyone's actions. And it also gets into a question about academics and what happens when academics begin to try to study people's secrets and history, because part of what touched this off was an effort to gather an oral history of the Troubles from people who were involved. But then, of course, that's people confessing to various things that they've done. And what is the responsibility of academics to guard that information when they don't necessarily have the legal protections, for example, that journalists have? It gets into a whole lot of different things, but it is a fascinating book. Again, it's called Say Nothing. It just came out in February, and I strongly recommend it. It's one of those books that it's a great read, but also you realize like, oh, I've gained an understanding of a part of history that I was not great at in the past. So that is what is making me happy this week. Nice. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon and Audie at NPR Audie. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. If you have a second and you're so inclined, do subscribe to our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here next week.
This is Kenny Malone from Planet Money. Now, maybe you've heard there is a new Jeopardy champion, James Holzhauer. He's been racking up record daily winnings. He is also sort of my brother-in-law. On Planet Money, we are going to ask, what makes Jamie so great? No, seriously, what is James doing that makes him so much better than everyone else? Subscribe and download Planet Money.